Hello, I'm Russell Brooks, and this is number 0365 of the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0365. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, a return visit from Pete Trabuco, who is a roller coaster and theme park expert. He's back on the show to talk about water park safety in light of the recent death of a 10-year-old boy at a park in Kansas City.
The thing about roller coasters at thrill rides is that you're secure. You've actually got a harness. It's done basically on weight ratios. If you don't fit the actual weight ratio, you don't get on the ride, period. You've got about a 1 in 700 million chance of getting into a fatality at an amusement park. Now, when you're talking about water rides, that goes up drastically, obviously, because of the fact that gravity is one thing, but you can't rely on centrifugal force, the weight of the actual raft. There are so many other factors that cannot be factored in.
Lee Romanoff, author of Get Rich by Telling People Where to Go, talks about making money online.
We give free advice all the time, every day. We tell people the best hairdresser to go to, what yoga instructor to call, which lawyer or doctor give free consultations. And when we do it just normally, we give our advice away for free. But on the internet, we can get paid for it no matter what industry, no matter what topic.
Actor Roe Brooks is the author of How to Go From Extra to Actor, the Aspiring Actor's Guide to Stardom.
I've been acting for over 20 years. It's been a long road. And, you know, a lot of things I had to do for no money in order to even get recognized on a certain platform. So you take a lot of chance of doing a lot of free work first, to start off to get your name recognized or to get your face recognized.
And we have lots and lots and lots of stuff. And, of course, an idiot of the day, the guest Slater. The person who told you this was show number 0365 was Russell Brooks, former Canadian track and field team member who is currently a thriller author and an accomplished violinist. His latest book is entitled The Demeter Code, and you can check out his website at russellparkway.com. That's russellparkway.com. And you can just go to the website at thestufffile.com, click on the What's On page for this show, which Russell just told you, number 0365, and you'll find the link to Russell's website. See, it's all synergy. It all goes around in a circle. See how that happens? Thank you very much, Russell, for doing the guest late on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. And before we get to the stuff, I just want to mention something very quickly. Recently, just last week on this program, we talked to David Gannon, the man behind Elita Hair Products. Their website is elitahair.com. That's ElitaHair.com, all one word. Well, he continues his special offer for Stuff File program listeners. When you purchase Elita Hair Products from Beverly Hills, use the promo code STUFF10. That's STUPH10, STUFF10. This will entitle you to a 10% discount on your purchase. That's the promo code STUFF10. You can also go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which, as I mentioned, is number 0365, and you'll find the promo code and a link near the bottom of the page. So, there you go. And, as I mentioned, this program is also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Police in Doraville, Georgia, population 8,300, made a huge drug bust, confiscating nearly 2 tons of marijuana worth about $1.6 to $1.9 million. Now, this has to be the quote of the day. Officers said that they were, quote, pretty confident this would exceed personal use. 2 tons, you figure? Yeah. Well, they charged Alejandro Perez with drug trafficking. Now, who put the cops, or what put the cops onto Perez, you ask? Well, he called attention to himself by driving on the wrong side of the road and then going through a stop sign. When stopped, he told officers he didn't have a license, which led to the box truck he was driving to be impounded and thus searched. Clearly, not a bright boy. So it's also safe to say that at least some of the marijuana might have been for personal use. Yeah. Anyway, a man walked into a McDonald's in Sweden carrying something odd. A dead badger. The staff reacted quickly and asked him to leave. The man went outside and then it got weird. Yeah. He didn't take this rejection lightly and reacted by starting to pummel cars outside the restaurant with the dead badger. We were waiting for the food at the drive-in when we saw him swinging a dead badger, a witness said. He said the man then threw the animal at his car. It landed on the roof of the car, and there are scraps of meat and scratches there now. The police arrived and made the man leave. What happened to the badger is unknown. Wait a minute. They just asked a man to leave? Apparently it's not illegal to swing a dead badger in Sweden. Interesting. Badgers? We don't need no stinking badgers. Anyway, 36-year-old Noah Elkins was driving in Laurel Canyon, Kentucky, with 35-year-old Priscilla Simpson when Elkins crashed into a power pole. The crash disturbed a beehive. Gary Anderson was in his front yard when the accident happened, and Elkins and Simpson grabbed Anderson's garden hose to try to spray off the bees while screaming and squalling and running around like a chicken with its head cut off, Anderson said. I didn't know he was getting et up by bees. I thought he was just high. And by the way, this story has it written E-T apostrophe. That's et up, apparently, by bees. Well, according to police, they both were using a combination of drugs. So I guess it's not only the bees who are a little buzzed, but I digress. The couple was looking for a place to swim and, quote, that girl in that little bikini, she had little red dots all over her from bee stings, Anderson said. They were taken to hospital for treatment for the stings as well as injuries from the crash. Anderson was also stung. If they feel like my leg feels, Anderson said, I'd say they're learning their lesson. Yeah, learning the hard way can sometimes really, you know, sting. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a couple traveling on a stretch of Pennsylvania freeway captured video of a woman steering her car with her feet while using both hands to text. Sarah and Sean DeLong captured video of the woman using her feet to steady the steering wheel while traveling on the Schuylkill Expressway in Center City. Someone is going to get killed. That's why I was so mad. You see people on their phones all the time, but that took the cake, Sarah DeLong told local television reporters. For a good 20 minutes, we were in her vicinity, whether it was beside her or behind her. The DeLong say they tried to get the woman's attention. At one point, we beeped at her and I yelled, "Get off your phone." And she looked and smirked at me and went right back to doing whatever it was she was doing on her phone, Sarah DeLong said. Sean DeLong said he was baffled by the spectacle. I've seen people reading and writing with their documents, but not driving with their feet, Sean said. The video emerged just days after a woman driving on a stretch of Colorado Interstate was recorded focusing on her phone behind the wheel while resting a leg on the dashboard. You know, I've seen the video of this moron behind the wheel. All I keep thinking is, if she hits something head-on, they're going to be pulling phone fragments and pieces of kneecap out of where her nose used to be. Yeah. Well, anyway, let's just get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, since we're talking about safety. Pete Trabuco is a travel expert and also a bit of a thrill seeker. He is the author of America's Top Roller Coasters and Amusement Parks. We talked to him about roller coasters and water parks in the past, but this time, in light of the recent death of a 10-year-old boy at a water park slide in Kansas City, we thought we'd have him back to talk about amusement park safety. Hi, Peter.
Hey, Bonjour. How are you doing today?
I'm doing okay. Thanks for being on the program with us once again. As you mentioned, there was that tragic incident in Kansas City where a child, a 10-year-old boy, was killed, and recently there was also three other children hospitalized in a Ferris wheel accident in Tennessee. But I want to talk about the water parks in general, because I've been finding some statistics that are rather interesting or rather scary. Water parks are considered on the danger level the most dangerous of rides, because I understand in 2015 there were 7,200 water slide injuries in that year. 7,200. So what are your thoughts on the safety of water slides or water parks?
Well, you have to understand, when you're dealing with water parks and water rides, you know, the thing about roller coasters at thrill rides and at theme parks is that they are, you're secure. You've actually got a harness. It's done basically on weight ratios. If you don't fit the actual weight ratio, you don't get on the ride, period. There are a lot of things that go on. In fact, you've got about a 1 in 700 million chance of getting into an accident or a fatality, not an accident, but a fatality, at an amusement park with those manufacturers. Now, when you're talking about water rides, that goes up drastically, obviously, because of the fact that, you know, gravity is one thing, but you can't rely on centrifugal force, the weight of the actual raft. There are so many other factors that cannot be factored in with rides where you're not harnessed, properly harnessed. In Verrückt, which is the, a 2014 brand-new ride, 166-foot fantastic ride, multi-passenger type of a ride, and I actually talked about it many times on the radio last year when it first came out. You know, something like that, it's going to be very, very difficult to figure out all the different aspects of what might happen. In this case, with Caleb Thomas, unfortunately, it was very tragic.
Now, let's talk about this particular ride, Verrückt, which means insane in German, by the way. The park, I understand, in Kansas City, they didn't have a restriction on the height of their rides in Kansas, and also the ride opening itself was delayed three times. A portion was rebuilt over concerns that sandbags were launched out of the raft. So there was some issues and concerns about this ride before it even opened, right?
No, there was. In fact, the delays were for that very reason. You know, being at 166 feet tall, tallest water ride on the planet, basically, or in this case in the United States, you really got to take care of what's happening there. And unfortunately, the weight restrictions, or in this case the weight capacity, has to be pretty much within the parameters, you know, no less than 300 pounds, no more than 450, I think it is, or whatever the figures are. But you want to make sure that you have it right, and it's so hard. And then there's atmospherics that gets into consideration, winds, direction, velocity, that type of stuff, which also cause these issues to occur. So there were some definite issues with this ride. Being that tall and not being harnessed in was not a very good thing. And now, as far as Schlitterbahn itself, they've got a very good name in the industry and they've done extremely well. So this is something that's really, really out of the ordinary.
And to give people an idea of what we're talking about with the height, because you've mentioned it in feet several times, we're talking about 17 stories. It's about a foot taller than Niagara Falls. It's about 57 feet taller than the Statue of Liberty from torch to base. You talk about the minimum weight restrictions or regulations for that ride. The way it works is you're basically in some sort of raft device and you're strapped in. I understand that there are usually three people in a raft and there's a minimum weight restriction. At the time that this boy died, there were two other people in the raft. They had only minor injuries. Is there a concern on your part about the idea, considering that there is a weight restriction involved anyway, that a 10-year-old should be on this ride?
Well, it depends on the size of the 10-year-old. You know, I've been on rides on roller coasters where the harness didn't go all the way down because even though the person had met the 54-inch, height restriction, they were very thin and very skinny. And I remember one point I was literally holding on to this kid as he's almost flying out of the back end of a roller coaster because there was some room. I didn't even know this person, but I could just see it was a pretty dangerous situation. So I grabbed onto him from the back of his shirt, kept him actually in the compartment, and told, of course, the ride operators about that. It does happen from time to time in this particular case. Would I be worried about it? No, this is probably something that happened. I would definitely not ride Verrückt until they figured out what the issues were. The harnesses weren't restraining properly. Maybe there was too much room, and you know, again, it's the weight. It sounded to me like it might have been a little underweight because the centrifugal force of that actual dive and then that little jump, like this little bump that they have there, forced him out of the actual raft itself. That could be a possibility. At this point, no one really knows. It's all conjecture. But hopefully, after the investigation, which will be a big one, I imagine, we'll know pretty much what happened.
Centrifugal force, an interesting theory, because as we mentioned, that drop, the first drop is 168 feet, but then it loops back up, and the second drop is only 50, and that's where the child died, correct?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And that's what it sounds like to me, yeah.
Yeah. Now, safety, of course, is a very important issue when it comes to these rides. I understand that in the case of this particular ride, it is literally checked every day before it's in operation.
Well, all rides are, by law, need to be checked. The manufacturer has very stringent guidelines, and this is why you don't hear, I mean, I know there's two this week, but you don't really hear of amusement park injuries, or in this case, water park, you know, deaths or injuries. I think there was something I guess it was like a couple of days ago where a person broke a leg. She was a little heavier than the weight restriction, and she had broken a leg, and she's suing for $1 million. But overall, you know, these things are very safe. They're checked thoroughly. And, you know, these manufacturers want to make sure that these rides are safe, because the lifeblood of any water park or theme park is really on not having a lot of publicity. Like when an airplane goes down, you hear about it. It happens very, very infrequently, but when it does happen, you hear about it. Same with water parks and thrill rides, and in this case, amusement parks and water parks. You don't want to have this in the press because, again, the lifeblood of any of these places is a safety record.
What kinds of tests are performed on a regular basis?
Well, again, it depends on each ride. I mean, you know, obviously, I'm more of a roller coaster person, so I can tell you that there's electronic tests, there's backup systems, there's actually walking the track in many cases, especially on the wood coasters, because they can be affected by a lot of different, you know, aspects, you know, weather, you know, humidity and so on down the line. On a water park, again, basically it's tested. The rafts are looked at. They go through a whole process, probably like with the amusement parks, where they actually test it out to make sure it's working properly. Ride operators, obviously, are going to make sure that everyone's harnessed in if there's a harness. And, you know, they go through this whole process all the time. But you have to realize thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people will be riding these rides every day. And unfortunately, every once in a while, like in this particular case, you know, it's kind of like the perfect storm, as they say, in which everything seemed to have gone wrong, and this person, unfortunately, was a fatality because of it.
As you said earlier, you wouldn't be getting on a ride like this if it's not checked out thoroughly, as to find out what happened in this particular case. And, of course, that makes perfectly logical sense. But generally speaking, do you have any concerns about water parks? And given light as to what has happened in this particular case, do you think the general public should be concerned? Or that overall, as you said earlier, the safety levels are very high, and this is just, unfortunately, a freak accident?
Well, the safety levels are extremely high, and I'm a water park person as well as a thrill ride and amusement park person. You know, obviously, I'm not going to go on the tallest slide, water slide, only because I don't want to get a wedgie pretty badly, so I probably wouldn't do that. But overall, these rides are extremely safe. They're checked a lot. The ones that have been around for ages, you have minor little scrapes, maybe scratches or something along those lines. But in this particular case, obviously something drastically went wrong, especially on that second hill that caused this ride to do that. I would not have my kids, let's put it that way, or anybody that I know go on that ride until it was completely figured out what exactly happened. And maybe they have to change that ride so that it doesn't have that second turnaround drop, because that seems to be where the incident occurred, and that seems to be where the problems were. So they might have to get rid of that. I've seen roller coasters that actually changed their actual track to accommodate that, to make it easier and safer.
And would you be concerned, not only because there was a death at this particular park on this ride, but there was such a history of delays in opening it because they had concerns about safety initially? Would the two together give you cause for concern?
Well, actually, it would. I mean, I can go back to the old Apollo days when we were going to the moon in Apollo 1, which, you know, it was go fever. We wanted to get this thing out, and unfortunately, three astronauts lost their lives due to the fact that we were trying to rush things. Well, in this particular case, it sounds like the same thing has happened, that maybe there were some issues that were not totally ironed out, and this actually did happen. I mean, I'm not privy to the information at this point. The investigators will have all that information. But, yeah, there is a definite concern about this particular roller coaster, or in this case, this particular ride, this water ride, and I wouldn't go on it until it got all straightened out.
Pete, I thank you once again for being on the program with us. It's always a pleasure to talk to you and share some of your expertise.
Well, thank you for having me. You have a great day.
Pete Trabuco, author of America's Top Roller Coasters and Amusement Parks. You can also go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0365, and you'll find links to Pete's website and also links to Amazon.com where you can order his book directly.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
From Montreal, Canada, and spanning the globe like a butterfly on speed, this is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to Lee Romanoff, author of Get Rich by Telling People Where to Go. And we'll also meet actor Roe Brooks, who is the author of How to Go from Extra to Actor. So stick around for that. We also have a lot more Stuff File news right here, right now, on a program that's also heard on Citrus Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. And oh yes, we do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on. Well, moving right along, 52-year-old Carrie Johnson told a court he doesn't have any money, but he also claimed a $10,000 monthly income. Prosecutors say he told them he has a gambling problem. Charleston, West Virginia police say he told them that from 10 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. he was at a casino, but something he says he does not recall has led to criminal charges. Taking a break from the blackjack table to get more money by robbing a bank. He could face as much as 2 decades in prison. Gee, maybe he was hoping to win those years back on the next hand. Anyway, we have a zero-tolerance policy on rules. That's a quote from Grant Gravitt, executive producer of the Miss Florida USA pageant, a stepping stone to the Miss USA pageant, which then leads to the Miss Universe pageant. And he says, Miss Florida USA has lost her crown just a week after she received it, beating out 64 other women. Unfortunately, our title holder sought an unfair competitive advantage, and that's just not acceptable in our system, Gravitt said. She made a poor life choice. Oh dear, what rule did 24-year-old Genesis Davila violate? She let someone else do her hair and makeup for her, which is strictly a no-no, Gravitt says. Runner-up Lynette De Los Santos will take the crown, but not if Davila's lawyers have anything to say about it. She's still Miss Florida, asserts attorney Myra Joel. She's still Miss Florida USA. Justice is going to be served. Well, it sounds like they can't make up and they're just splitting hairs now. Yeah. Anyway, police in the southern Oregon community of Rogue River say a man walking through a park discovered a portable toilet filled with marijuana plants. The agency posted a photo on social media saying it's the largest seizure of pot the department has ever made. Marijuana grow-ops are common in southern Oregon, which has some of the nation's best conditions for outdoor cultivation. Chief Ken Lewis said police still don't know how the pot got there. He said it could be anything from a pickup point to a disgruntled citizen making a statement about all the marijuana grows. Lewis said a public works employee checked the toilet 3 hours before the discovery was made, and at that time, it was empty. People playing tennis on a nearby court saw nothing suspicious. Well, this certainly puts the pot in porta potty, doesn't it? At least the place smells fresher. Okay, moving right along. There was this guy in Toronto who was so drunk. How drunk was he? Glad you asked. He was so drunk he thought it was a cab. It wasn't. It was a police cruiser. Toronto police said an intoxicated man got into a police vehicle Saturday night thinking it was a taxi. A police spokesperson said the officer had stopped to get gas at a police station garage in Liberty Village when the man climbed inside the cruiser. He was arrested after the officer discovered he was wanted on an outstanding warrant. Oh, that's just rich. For police, that's like shooting fish in a barrel. It's always nice when the felons come to you, don't they? Yeah. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, in their never-ending drive to hopefully annoy meat lovers, the gnat-like pests at PETA are seriously asking a tiny Tasmanian community called Eggs and Bacon Bay to change their name to something more vegan-friendly. Yet another idiotic stance that, at the very least, will get them press and occasional fits of laughter. PETA has recommended the name be changed to Apple and Cherry Bay to promote a healthier vegan diet. And it's not even joking. Obviously, Tasmania is known as the Apple Isle, and the Huon Valley produces a lot of apples and cherries, and we think it's a much better, kinder, compassionate, and healthier name for this particular area, PETA Australian campaign coordinator Claire Fryer told the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, or ABC. Considering the high levels of cholesterol and saturated fat in both eggs and bacon, the area might as well be called Heart Attack Bay. The name change could be just what the doctor ordered. The group had reportedly written with a straight face to the local Huon Valley Council requesting the name change, and the mayor said he's willing to consider the idea, but it probably won't go over well with his constituents. These single-interest groups ought to go overseas and annoy the bleep out of ISIS, a local resident named Doug told ABC. There's plenty of room in the world for them to go and annoy other people and leave us in peace. The area apparently got its name from the colors of the wildflowers that dot the shoreline. You know, the pinheads at PETA never cease to amaze and amuse me, and I usually read about them while eating a nice juicy burger. Yeah. Anyway. Let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? How do you monetize a website? Well, let's give one type of example. There are plenty of reasons to love chocolate, and Lee Romanoff has found one more. Chocolate can make you rich. Lee can tell you how to monetize your fondness for the number one longevity food by creating a delicious-looking website featuring chocolate recipes, videos, gifts, and more, while at the same time recommending people whose livelihoods are tied to chocolate. How is this done, you ask? Well, we put that question to Lee. She's the author of Get Rich by Telling People Where to Go, and she joins us on the line from California. Hi, Lee.
Hi. How are you doing?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for being on the program with us.
Oh, perfect.
I think that what you're describing is very similar to the old days of the gold rush. You know, everyone went panning for gold and everyone wanted to get rich off gold. But really what happened was the people who got rich were the people who sold the pans, sold the maps, and people like Levi Strauss, who sold the clothing that people wore when they went panning for gold.
That's true. But now with the internet, it's even better. What we can do is we give free advice all the time, every day. We tell people, you know, the best hairdresser to go to, what yoga instructor to call, which lawyer or doctor give free consultations. And if when we do it just normally, we give our advice away for free. But on the internet, we can get paid for it no matter what industry, no matter what topic, even the love of chocolate. And by doing that, what I'm saying is that online, you can talk all day long about your favorite topic. Let's take chocolate. And when people are reading about chocolate and watching the videos that you've put on your website, you can also send leads to companies. Just say, you know, this wedding planner is fantastic. And they have this beautiful chocolate fountain that, you know, they you can use. Or, you know, why not get some cooking lessons about how to cook chocolate? Chocolate is actually very, very good for you. So you can actually generate revenue from your opinion by telling people where to go. Now, I created a really nice software platform that you can just drop your content in, and it will track every lead you make and automatically create the invoice. It's spectacular. I actually ended up sending $5 leads to insurance companies for car insurance, the lowest car insurance rates. I never, ever thought that $5 lead would ever turn into millions of dollars in revenue.
Wow.
And I was shocked. And then I realized you could do it for any topic in any industry. In fact, that's Google's model. That's Angie's List's model, Priceline's, Pinterest. All the big money companies send leads to companies that pay them. So why not become a big money company on something you love, like chocolate?
Now, you mentioned putting up a website and putting up your content, but really what you're talking about is not necessarily content you've created, correct?
Oh, that's another beautiful thing. Think of all the big money companies like Google, Facebook, YouTube, Pinterest. They don't create that content. They ask their visitors to contribute content. And so when people contribute content to your website, it starts growing and growing, and you're basically considered a hub where you're getting the content like Facebook or Pinterest, and then on the other end, you're sending leads out to companies that pay you. That's what their model is. You can do the same thing. You can even get videos to kick off your website from YouTube, because they have a share link, and you can put any number of chocolate videos or any other industry, their videos, on your website. And that's what makes your website even more interesting.
Okay, so how much knowledge do you have to have on said issue? I would assume that the best game plan would be to pick something you're already passionate about so that you have a knowledge of. But let's stick with the example of chocolate. Let's say you're a chocolate fan. Do you have to do research on chocolate on your own? Do you have to write articles about chocolate on your website? What exactly do you have to do to get started besides being a collector of information that's already on the web about chocolate?
Oh, it's really easy to get started. First of all, you don't have to be an expert in anything. You just have to have a passion for it. And what I would do is I would find a really interesting video on chocolate. And actually, if you go to nova.incomeactivator.com, you can see that I just grabbed a really interesting video on chocolate. And that you just send that video out to people, or send a link in an email to people, your friends and family, to come to your website to check out the video. And on the same page, you ask them to contribute their stories on chocolate. You feature their stories, much like Facebook features everybody's profile.
and then you send a link back out to their story that they will send out to their friends and family, and they will start contributing their content. It works very systematically. When people give you their content, you feature it, send them out a link, they send their friends and family to it, and then your stories grow and grow.
And on that point, how does money start to roll in?
Oh, very easily. You can actually register for Google pay-per-click links, Google, and then have Google Ads pay-per-click links on your website. Google pays you directly 68% of what the advertiser pays them. So that right there is one of your lead models. You can also have a little directory, much like Angie's List, where people can go to that directory and say, oh, yeah, I want to take a cooking class, or I want to take a course in, you know, chocolate in this online university. So you can just go to these companies and say, will you pay me for leads if I send leads from my website? 90% of those companies will say, absolutely, because every company needs leads. And then you just negotiate how much a lead is worth. $5, $10, $40. Lawyers will pay up to $200 per lead. It's amazing.
Well, let's go back to a little bit to when you first started doing this. You mentioned earlier that you started giving leads for insurance companies. How did you start doing that? And why insurance companies in your case?
Okay, I just wanted to find out which insurance company had the lowest car insurance rate for me. And when I found that out, I thought that was really valuable information because it saved me hundreds of dollars. So I went to a friend of mine and I said, Rick, do you know of any insurance broker that would want leads? And he said, call Tom. And I called Tom and I said, Tom, will you pay me $5 if I send you car insurance leads? And he said, okay. So then I started to, you know, get information on car insurance, and then Tom would give me information on it, and I would find information on YouTube and post videos. I would send some really cool links to videos to my site and say, complete this, you'll find out who has the lowest car insurance rates, and if you want to get a broker to write your insurance, just complete this form. And it was, the information was sent to Tom. Tom paid me $5 for that lead. That lead turned into $50,000 a month before I got another insurance broker to send leads to.
Wow. That's the entrepreneurial spirit is definitely alive.
Yeah, and, you know, it's crazy because I didn't know anything about car insurance. Hmm. All I knew is that if you went to my website, I will tell you who has the lowest rates, because I found that out. And if you actually wanted an insurance policy, fill out your name and email address. That information was sent to Tom. Every time that information was sent, he paid me $5. So, but you know, it starts off slowly, but then it starts building, because the more website pages you have, the more traffic you'll get, and the more money you make when you send leads to companies that pay.
And you said, you know, you said this starts off slowly. What time period are we talking about from when you first started doing it to when you were making a sizable amount of money?
Well, my first month I made about, I think it was about, I'm trying to think back, about $40. My second month, when I realized, I made $40, I put up more pages, and I told more of my friends to come to the site. The next month I made $300, and I thought, geez, I could live off $300. But I just kept on doing the same thing. The more pages I put up, the more interesting videos I put up, the more emails I would send out to people. They would come to the site, get the lowest car insurance rates. Then that $300 turned into $3,000, and that $3,000 turned into $30,000. And it just grew from there, because it was just one simple process. I had one message: come to my website and check out this, whatever this is, whether it's chocolate, whether it's car insurance, whether it's, you know, information about lawyers. You're the hub. You're the gatherer of information. You get your information from your visitor traffic, and then you send leads to companies that will be of interest to your visitor traffic. That's
okay.
It. Think
okay.
of Uber.
Another excellent example. We've got less than a minute, so I just want to get out the information. I said in the introduction, you're the author of the book, Get Rich by Telling People Where to Go. How do people find your book?
Oh, they just simply go to incomeactivator.com. It's right there.
Incomeactivator.com.
That's correct.
Lee, thank you very, very much for being on the program with us. This has been most informative.
Okay, thank you for interviewing me.
Lee Romanoff, author of Get Rich by Telling People Where to Go. You can find more information by going to our website at incomeactivator.com. You can also go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0365, and you'll find links to her site, plus also links to either amazon.com or amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. During the opening ceremony of the Olympics in Rio de Janeiro, supermodel Gisele Bündchen set a distinctly Brazilian tone for the Games by taking a long, sultry walk across the stage to the song Girl from Ipanema. That song, first released in 1964, has become the second most recorded pop song in history. It made millions for the Brazilian songwriters, but the real-life Girl from Ipanema who inspired them to write it didn't get a penny. After the two songwriters died, she opened a boutique in Rio and called it, can you guess? That's right, The Girl from Ipanema. That didn't sit well with the heirs of the song's creators, though. They own a trademark on the name, and they sued her. Let's be fair, they may have had a legitimate claim, but the lawsuit was strongly criticized in Brazil. The woman who inspired the famous song is widely loved in her country, and in the end, the judge ruled in her favor. Today, if you go to Rio and visit that store, you may just have a chance to meet the real girl from Ipanema. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamericatv.org.
Actors, authors, quirky guests, and the comic book. It all comes to you here on the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to actor Roe Brooks, who you see on the show The Haves and the Have-Nots. He's got a new book out about how to go from extra to actor. Plus, we do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on, so stay tuned for that. Here on a program, also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. But I got one more Stuff File news story to share with you before we get to our next guest. And that story is 23-year-old Jeffrey Fortier was arrested in Craighead County, Arkansas in July and charged with video voyeurism of a woman who he allowed to shower in the home he occupied along with his girlfriend. Now, after the woman stepped out of the shower, she noticed a logged-on iPad propped up against the wall. Fortier informed deputies that it was all a misunderstanding, that he had earlier recorded himself urinating in order to sell the video to a urination fetish website, and he simply forgot to remove the device. You know, I don't know which is creepier, his alleged crime or his explanation. They are both really out there. Really, really out there. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Roe Brooks is a very busy actor these days, best known for his role as Michael on Tyler Perry's The Haves and the Have-Nots, which is on OWN. But he has still found the time to write a book on acting entitled How to Go from Extra to Actor, The Aspiring Actor's Guide to Stardom. Roe joins us on the line right now from Los Angeles. Hi, Roe.
Hey, how you doing?
Just fine. Thanks for being on the program with us.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
So you've come out with this book. You've gone through the process yourself, obviously. What made you feel you needed to write this book?
Because when I started acting, I didn't have the resources that I needed, and I wasted a lot of time and a lot of money. So once I learned the hard way what I needed to learn, I felt it was only right that I give back to aspiring actors so they won't have to do or take the same steps that I took.
So I'm assuming then you're saying is that you had a lot of stumbling blocks along the way. You made some mistakes. What were some of the mistakes that you made, and how common are they for young actors starting out, the mistakes you made?
Well, they're extremely, extremely common. The mistakes that I made, you wouldn't think they would be as large as they are, but in regards to photographers, picking the right photographers, when I started, they would charge you like $800 and things like that. Or you would hear that you would have to pay this kind of money to get a well-known photographer. Like they could be the only one that took really good pictures. So you would find yourself trying to find this money to get this photographer for his name and waste a lot of money and not be seen any more than you would for someone who paid $100 for the same picture, or submitting bunches, like a lot of headshots to different places that didn't take unsolicited mail. So you would waste a lot of mail on postage and headshots and, you know, just it was so many things that I would do not knowing. And then, you know, we're starving artists, so we're not working with a lot of money from the beginning anyway. So everything we spend, you know, it counts. And when it comes back void, it sets you back. So those are two of the main things that cost me a lot of money, because we had to buy pictures by the thousands. And, I mean, it's easier now because you can get them online or you could, you know, print one or two at a time. But then it was very hectic.
I can imagine. Now, I'm sure you're fully aware a lot of people have misconceptions about what it's like to be an actor, especially if you're living in Hollywood, and that is that it's, you know, the streets are paved with gold and everyone is acting, but the reality is that SAG members who have their acting card, the amount of people who make a living at it, less than 10% of the members make a living at
it
full time. So having said that, how long of a process was it for you? I mean, you had jobs along the way, but how long was it to process for you until you finally felt, this is a career I can sustain and make a living at?
I've always felt like that. I've been acting for over 20 years, and it's been a long road. And, you know, a lot of things I had to do for no money in order to even get recognized on a certain platform. So you just take a lot of chances on doing a lot of free work first, to, you know, to start off to get your name recognized or to get your face recognized. But to answer your question, it took me at least, I would say 2010 is when I really, really started feeling like, okay, I'm getting my money back now. This is really starting to pay off. It's been a lot of years prior to that, where, you know, I never really wanted to quit, but it definitely ran across my mind because of how hard it is to succeed in this business. Like you said, only 10% of all the union card holders are actually making money in this business. So that's a small percentage of all those who have those cards.
Now, as the title of your book suggests, there is a leap to be made from extra to actor. How long were you an extra?
Several years. I was an extra. I would say at least 5 years. I did extra work, and I'll tell you, I started as an extra in Baltimore. My first movie playing background was in Robert Townsend's movie, Meteor Man. So I worked on a lot of different projects in Baltimore, D.C. area. And then when I finally moved out here to L.A., no one really knew me out here. So when I got out here, I went back to the extra world for a year just to get into or to find out who's who in the industry out here. Because, like, you know, you could be at the top of your game in your city, but once you come into a world like LA, you have to, you know, you have to almost like start over. And that's what I had to do. So I did it for about a year out here, and that was it. But I learned what I needed to learn, and that's what it's for. It's a learning process. You don't do it to be a background talent. You do it to gain, you know, education and knowledge and the connect that you need to get out
What I put into the book.
How much does talent is everything, obviously, but how much does luck and timing play in the business? And the reason why I bring that up, like you just described, you're originally from Baltimore. You started working at a time when there was a lot of stuff going on in Baltimore. There wasn't a lot before. There wasn't a lot after. I mean, you mentioned Meteor Man. There's Homicide, right. Life in the Streets. There's The Wire. A lot was happening over a period of time in Baltimore.
I did all of those episodes, by the way, all those shows. I worked on all of those.
So you were working at a time when you first started when Baltimore was kind of booming.
Yeah, for a small town, it was kind of making a name for itself, yes.
So, again, going back
to... It dried up.
Yeah, so again, going back to my question, you know, talent is everything, but how much of a role does luck and timing play?
Well, I would say I'm not a luck guy. I don't really believe in luck. I believe in faith and hard work and determination and being in the right place at the right time. And that's not even on you. That just happens in the way things go. You happen to be in the right place. That's the lining up of the planets. But talent is not even the first thing. Talent is really the last thing. Your drive and your determination will take you where you need to go. Your talent will sustain you once you get there. But if you have talent and don't have drive, then it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't matter. All the talent in the world, but you don't. It's like almost having the best book in the world, but if it's not on the shelf, who knows it?
If does it make things difficult, and does it make the drive more of a challenge when you're an actor of color, when you're black, and you have to fight for the roles that are out there? And to be honest, they're not always the best roles to grab.
Yeah, it does make it hard because they're not. First of all, they're not always the best roles, and then the roles that there are, every black actor that fits the same profile are going out for that most times just one role. So when it's only, when it's that narrow, it becomes a very hard business because, everybody's going for the same job. There's only one opportunity. So, that's what we fight for now, that diversity. We need that. All of us, everybody, all races, we need more diversity in the film industry, to hear everybody's side of the story or where they came from. We want to see how you grew up from your eyes, not someone who wanted to be from there or tried to give you a picture of a place where they've never seen. But, we get our own picture. And, with more directors and more writers and more people behind the camera, That's what's going to happen. So we're getting more opportunity. You have my show now. You have Empire. You have Scandal. You have a lot of Being Mary Jane. It's a lot of great shows. And these shows are all top 10 shows on major networks. So, got to work hard. And eventually you'll get your turn.
We've got just about a minute. I just want to ask this question before I let you go, and that is, your book, How to Go from Extra to Actor, The Aspiring Actor's Guide to Stardom. What's the biggest point you want to get across to a starting actor out there?
Just never give up. I mean, it might sound corny, but never give up. You go through so much in this business. You hear so many no's. You're going to hear 100 or 1,000 no's before you hear that one yes. And for those strong skin, this isn't the business for you. So if you do have that strong skin and you know this is for you and it's in your stomach and crave for it and this is your passion, you fight for it until you win. Because when you give up, you lose already. But when you fight for it, you ought to make a space for your talent.
And you're not only going to hear no from the people who have the jobs, you're going to also hear no from friends and family, aren't you? People who think maybe it's time
people
to move on.
They don't believe you. They don't see your vision. To make people see what you know from the people. Yes, and that will make you feel a certain way because these are the people that you felt like should have your back. Not always like that. So it makes it that much tougher.
Important.
And it gives you that much more of a reason to succeed.
Important lessons to learn, and there are lessons that can be found in your book, How to Go from Extra to Actor, The Aspiring Actor's Guide to Stardom. Ro, I thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Actor Roe Brooks, author of How to Go From Extra to Actor, The Aspiring Actor's Guide to Stardom. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0365, and you'll find links to his website. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for The Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for The Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents The Idiot of the Day.
Fire officials in Centralia, Washington say a resident sparked a small fire in an apartment while trying to kill cockroaches with a homemade flamethrower. Fire crews were called to an apartment on Monday morning after receiving a report of a commercial structure fire. By the time firefighters arrived, the resident had extinguished the flames. No one was injured. A preliminary investigation found the resident was using bug spray and a lighter to create a flamethrower for killing cockroaches. That sparked the fire. It's not clear whether any cockroaches were actually killed in the process. Why? Oh, why would someone try to kill cockroaches indoors with a homemade flamethrower? Well, one reason and one reason only. They're idiots!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0365. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0365. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Experienced another edition of the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Now, doesn't that make you feel all warm and fuzzy? Like watching puppies and kittens frolicking in a field of daisies. Like the smells coming from Grandma's kitchen. Like the hallucinogenics you took in the 60s and I'm taking right now. Hello, cartoon birdies. Perhaps I've said too much. Anyway, you know what I mean. Let the glow wash over you and enjoy. Peace out.